from people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 38 for April 26th, 2007. The Homophonous Kumquat. Episode 39 of MacBreak Weekly, about to break all over you. Actually, it's 38. Ah, yes, the gang is back. Hail, hail, the gang's all here. Scott Bourne, welcome back from your trip down some rat hole or other. Don't know where you were, but we're glad you're back.
I went back home to Gig Harbor for a few days, and now I'm back home in my new home in San Francisco, and we're live at the Podango Production Studio today.
Oh, you're in the studio.
In the studio.
Every time you say Gig Harbor, I know that's in Washington State, but I always want to say Gig Harbor up in Maine, Gig Harbor.
But it's not the wrong place.
It's the wrong place. Alex Lindsay had his excuse. He had his hall pass. He was at the National Association of Broadcasters Convention and then Vancouver. And then what? Did you go to Pittsburgh, too? Where else did you go?
Well, before that, I was in Pittsburgh and New York. And then I went to Vegas. And then I went to Vancouver. And then I got home. And then I'm home until for another couple of days.
Woohoo!
And then I'm off to Africa.
And Merlin May. Oh, really? Oh, that's fun. We're going to do maybe get you on from South Africa if we can.
Yes. Yes.
Merlin Mann was at Web 2.0.
Yes, briefly, I stuck my head in to learn a little bit about how we were going to be able to drill down as regards kimono opening. I think really, you know, there were some exciting developments. I know this isn't strictly Mac related, but some of the action that's happening in the application stack space right now is really exciting.
The application stack?
Yeah, the application stack. You know, that's really where it's all happening. Also, tag
I like middleware. Was there any middleware news?
Oh, God. You know, Leo, middleware has never been more important, especially as we look into server-based tag solutions that'll scale across the enterprise.
Told me that Opera wants to eliminate the embed and object tag and replace it with a video tag. So there you go.
Wow.
We took time off for the biggest story in some time, which means that TWiT got to do all the analysis. But I should bring it up because I'm sure you guys have something to say about it. Steve Jobs, the Spinmeister, at it again, announcing that, well, the iPhone just taking so much of our energies. Good news, guys. It has passed some of its tests. We decided to transfer some engineers from Leopard. That means Leopard won't be out till October. Are you heartened or disheartened, Scott Bourne?
Well, I'm heartened that it looks like the iPhone's on schedule, and frankly, couldn't give a rip about whether or not Leopard ever comes out. But
His true spots come out, ladies and gentlemen.
But I will say that I'm a little chagrined that they're picking on my beloved iPhone as the excuse, and I'm starting to think that we're moving into Vista creep here.
Yeah. Does it pass the sniff test that Leopard would somehow have to slip because the iPhone needs more work? I don't understand.
I think if you were working on integration issues between the iPhone and the operating system, I think it would definitely make sense.
But because even though they call it OS X on the iPhone, it's an ARM chip. It's not OS X.
But the question is there's going to be tools on your Mac that are going to interrelate with the iPhone, and doing them in parallel may be difficult. You know, to try to figure out, you know, how the phone is going to, it might be better to get the phone done and then figure out all the, you know, those pieces. I just think that trying to release both of them at the same time would be very difficult. I was, if they're going to do tight integration, which is what I'm hoping to see, because I mean, of course, one of the things I'm really excited about is that, you know, we can actually use our phone with our computer, you know.
No more missing sync.
I don't know my Nokia Apple. Nokia released new iSync things for the Nokia 93 and the 95, and it syncs great. And my BlackBerry syncs great. I've had no problems with that.
I think syncing and total integration, I think, are two different things.
What does
and
total
I think
integration mean beyond syncing?
Well, I think that really having a seamless, you know, syncing is like I'm going to move everything over here, I'm going to move everything back over there.
Well, I change my contacts. It changes on both sides.
But what if I could access my, like when I plug in my iPhone or I get near my computer with Bluetooth, it popped up in my iCal and in my address book and in my, like a iPod
Sailing
pops
Clicker
up.
Sailing Clicker kind of does that.
I'm not familiar with that.
Oh, Sailing Clicker is cool. If you've never used that, maybe I'll make that my software pick for a Bluetooth phone. It's very cool. Well, I'll talk about it later.
All right.
Software pick.
I think it could be tighter than just sync. I think that really having that integration where you're able to move stuff around, you have access to all the files really easily. Right now, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like with a Palm, it's just this constant back and forth. Yeah. I'm very unhappy with the Palm
experience. And I don't think Palm's long for this world, let's face it.
Right. So I can't wait to blow up my 650.
In an interesting development, and it's not really related, but this week RIM showed a version of the BlackBerry software running on Windows Mobile 6. They're going to do it in emulation, which I think is the best thing that's ever happened to Windows mobile phones. To be able to run BlackBerry on it, it's great. And then it'll sync up nice. BlackBerry, I mean, RIM ships free a sync client for Mac. It's based on Pocket Mac. It works very well. What is new? Is there is some new news in the iPhone, isn't there?
There's lots of new news in the iPhone.
Yeah, there is. There was this leaked Engadget linked to a this iPhone Q&A. Did you guys see this?
Yep, from AT&T. Engadget.
Yeah, so basically it was some kind of a AT&T employee leaked document. I had a feeling you would have seen this, Scott. I'm not sure why, but...
So what did he say?
Well, it looks to be kind of just like an overview, kind of an FAQ for acquainting people at a very high level with what's happening, what we're doing, what we're not doing. Kind of stuff. So it's information on where people will be able to buy it, you know, what employees, you know, will they be able to get a discount, will you be able to pre-order, stuff like that. It's pretty, there's a fair amount of stuff in here.
And it looks like they're going to be a little more flexible than they might normally be about letting people do phone buys that already have a singular account so that they don't switch off a singular because they get mad. So won't be one of those deals where they say, well, I'm sorry, you're not entitled to an upgrade until sometime around 2045.
I don't know if it's coincidental, but I just got an email from Singular/AT&T today saying, oh, you've earned a phone upgrade.
And oh, there you go.
I guess
that's cool.
It's only been a year that I've had this BlackBerry. So, and they say, you get a deal on a phone if you sign up for 2 years. So I'm thinking maybe they are preparing people for
iPhone. You know what that says to me? It says to me that after you do that, the iPhone Pro will come out.
I am thinking I may be the contrarian here. I may wait and get the next generation and not get the first iPhone.
There's no way. By mid-July, I'm going to see you at the lab, and you're going to have your...
You're right. Yeah, you're right. I already have a singular account. They've just kind of said, you know, you can upgrade. It's going to be what? $600 though?
Jeez. You would be one of the 83% that don't want the phone, I guess.
83%?
Because 17% of all humankind does, according to a new Harris Interactive survey.
Yeah, we talked about that last time.
So all this, humankind.
The predictions now, you said an analyst, and we'll do the Apple's results just came out minutes ago, but an analyst is saying now that they're going to sell a lot, 10 times more phones than they predict?
There are a couple analysts that think it could be as much as 10 times more. You know, there's just tons of different little stories popping up. I mean, we see that AT&T has decided to go after the enterprise market, even though Microsoft told them not to.
I don't see it as an enterprise phone. I never did.
Well, then it may not. But even without that, they think there's going to be pretty wide penetration. And I really think that this is going to be, you know, an iPod caliber product for the company. I mean, I know that I'm allegedly too much of a fanboy to have a valid opinion, but I think if you take my fanboy hat off, even I think this is going to be a big deal.
You know, I just want to point out that 17% of all humankind is well over a billion people.
That's a lot of seats.
That's as many phones as were sold total last year. Total. Well, I mean, I think it's possible that it's going to go. I don't think anybody knows. It could go either way. It could be really, you know, out of the box, great. Word will spread very quickly. I think there'll be, in the first 2 weeks, a huge rush of people like Scott Bourne who'll just buy it sight unseen. Then everybody else will be kind of holding their breath, waiting to hear. And then the verdict will come out. And it could be very good or it could be very bad.
I'll tell you what can screw it up right now. Singular.
Well, that's obvious. And certainly their capacity to screw it up is undisputed.
Yeah, I'm a little bit concerned. There's another internal AT&T Singular memo that you probably didn't get that I got. It's their customer service motto, which is, we're not happy till you're not happy.
They've changed it officially, haven't they?
So I'm a little worried about that part. But assuming they don't drop the ball, it'll be a huge hit. And if they do, well, it'll end up like the Newton.
I'll bet you one thing. I think the price is going to be a little bit of a factor. I think if there's some kind of a price break,
it's
it is me too.
Yeah, I spent a lot of money. I mean, I just got that N95. Maybe that's why I just got that N95.
Well, I'm not currently a singular person. And I mean, as much as I hate to admit it, I mean, I'm kind of servile to Sprint at this point because I have a lot of skin in the game with buying their Trio.
Right.
So I can't be spending $600 a year on phones. I hate talking on the phone. So it doesn't really scale for me to spend that kind of money over time. So I don't know. I mean, but could you see them buy something like, probably not by Christmas maybe, but could you see the price dropping in the next 6 months or a year, do you think?
I think you'll see it out the gate.
Would they do it in concert with introducing a new model?
Yeah, they'll do the same exact thing they did with the iPod, right? They've got the one model, but then they quickly come out. How long did it take before they iPod?
Weren't we talking about the Nano the idea of iPhone Shuffle?
Where you iPhone just, Shuffle, yeah.
Just, no, you just click and you randomly get somebody. Get. Hi, Mom. sir.
Who is this? Sorry, Mom. Me again.
Joe's Pizza.
Skip.
But clearly, Apple thinks this is the next big category, and I think that this announcement from Apple is telegraphing that very clearly, and it scares me. That they are much more interested in the consumer electronics market, and they're willing to let Leopard slip because, there's a couple of ways you can interpret this. One, they're such a rinky-dink company, they can't afford to take 10 engineers off Leopard and put it on the iPhone. That's not good. Two,
you're making friends all over Cupertino. Well,
all of them are negative. They spun it as best they could, but every interpretation of this is negative. Two, the iPhone's in such trouble they needed to do this. Three, Leopard's in such trouble they needed to do this, or a combination of all three.
I still think it has to do with the integration.
I mean, I'll quote the always quotable John Gruber over at Daring Fireball, who said something that I thought was really smart. And you guys kind of all alluded to this a little bit, but you know, these are all devices that are going to be running on OS X. And so, I mean, I think one of the things that all the fanboys freaked out about was, oh, clearly this is going to be the nail in the coffin of Apple as a computer company. And I just don't believe that. I think it's a company that's building. pardon me. I think it's a company that's building out a lot of stuff based on their operating system.
I don't think we know. I think the problem is that Apple could be at this point going for the gold. The board could be saying, stockholders could be saying, hey, look how much money we made on the iPod. Let's try to do it again. Yeah. Create a new category. Take over. Yeah. I mean, the iPod was at from day one. I'm reading Stephen Levy's book, The Perfect Thing, which is a great book about the iPod. From day one, the goal of the iPod was let's conquer this category because it's not being done well and we can do it so much better. We can conquer it. They did it. Now, imagine the amount of Cupertino's already full of hubris. The amount of hubris generated by that. Hey, here's another category. Billion phones sold last year. Let's conquer that category. And, oh, yeah, we got a computer business. But, hey, this is much more interesting.
But the computer business keeps on getting bigger. I mean, if we look at sales, it's not like the sales of their computers is dropping. Their percentage in the market.
Not for now.
I think. I mean, they just released an 8-proc machine. You know, it's a... I don't think that they're slowing down as far as the development, you know, of that process. And if we were at NAB talking about, you know, looking at
so you vote
their
for
brand
the,
new
you vote for the point of view that Apple's such a rinky-dink company they can't both develop an iPhone.
No,
and
I vote for, as someone who has to deal with lots of integration of lots of moving parts, I vote for the fact that the cell phone, you know, they need to sort out the cell phone issues before they can finish the integration stuff that they want to do to make sure that the experience is really good within Leopard. I think that they want to do extra stuff that's there.
Well, you're kind of agreeing then. You're saying Leopard is taking is kind of secondary to the success of the iPhone. You're saying
Leopard follows iPhone. Well, I think that you just have to figure out which one is going to be done first, and then you're going to do one. And the iPhone, I think, is going to make more money than Leopard. And I think that that makes, I mean, it you just have to, I think that had to do with something with, we have to figure out how this little thing is going to work so that this bigger thing, because it's getting the phone, a phone because of the electronics is much more complicated to get it to work. So that has to be the thing that you have to figure out how to make it work because it's so low grade, generally low grade electronics, and much dumber electronics than what you have in the computer. So you figure the one out that has the most constraint, and then you have the one that has less constraint and you sort that one out against it. That would be, I can definitely see that that would be a reasonable issue as the process moves forward. So.
I think we gotta wait and see how much functionality they put in the iPhone, because really all we've seen from the iPhone is candy.
I'd really like them to take, for me, I'd really like them to take the cellular functionality out of it. I don't really care about that. I mean, I really don't. Well,
that's
really
why
like
people
everything.
Buy a phone. I got bad news for you.
No, but I mean, I'm just saying, I don't spend a lot of time on the phone. I want everything else that the phone does with the ability to do voice over IP.
See, I think you're unusual. I think most people who are buying the iPhone don't care about the music and all that stuff. They want a phone.
Well, I think they might. I just think that, as I said, with VoIP, for me, I'd be very happy with that. Because everything that we've seen so far, it looks like Singular is going to block the VoIP, or Apple's going to block the VoIP for Singular. So we're not going to be able to use voice over IP. We're going to be stuck with, you know, using Singular. I don't really care about that. I'd much rather have a cheap little phone, because I do mostly SMS and, you know, all that other stuff. But I'd rather have a cheap little phone that I keep in my bag that I answer every once in a while, and then have this thing that has all the other stuff that it does. And if it's integrated, it's integrated. I'm not that interested in going to Singular, to be honest.
I don't think Singular problem. Would agree with that approach.
No, I don't think that's their business.
I think they wouldn't.
But
I mean, it's, they need a carrier to get this thing to market. And I think it seems like Apple's done pretty well in terms of who gave away what to get where they are.
What are the features of the iPhone that are going to make, refresh my memory?
Well, what are the features that are going to make it? Because the phone isn't shipping yet.
Right.
Leo.
Is it a great camera? We don't know. Is it? I mean, it's great. Know. It's a great music player. It's a better mm-hmm. iPod than the iPod.
Yeah. Well, it's something to repeat myself. Something I said before is that, you know, cell phones are something, or mobile phones are something that we're all using all the time now. It's no longer an option for most people. Whether
right.
you want to have
everybody has one,
to the point where if you're like me. You know, I don't even really use a home phone anymore. I have like basic functionality to get voice calls to my mobile. But I think for most people, this has become the phone that they have. And we can all agree as one that most of our experiences with cell phones have been vociferously awful. I mean, just really terrible, terrible experiences. Like I've said often, my Sprint phone sometimes feels like the result of a business development meeting that happens to be inside of a phone. There's nothing in terms of the functionality being integrated. And that's why I think it is important that the OS work really optimally, because having all those pieces work together. I mean, for example, even on the Trio, which I love, how is it that there's nothing like Multifinder, that there's nothing like copy and paste? Does that ever drive you crazy? There's no way to get information from one place to another. And I just have to imagine that if this is based on OS 10, there's going to be ways where that stuff's all going to work together. I mean, setting aside all the other little bobbles and stuff, as long as it gets a good signal, is an iPod and is not a terrible experience, I think it's going to be a win just with that.
For $600.
Dude, people are paying a lot of money for these things. And you remember when the iPod came out and people were like, I'm going to buy an MP3 player for $500. Right. Yeah, that's going to happen.
Right.
And then people did, and then the price went down. And now they're paying $90 for an MP3 player.
So what's our consensus? This announcement, no big deal. It's not a problem?
I think people, I mean, just the responses on some of the Mac sites. I was on the Mac User podcast with those guys a week ago. Very cool guys. And
so that's where you were.
Oh, we see how you are, Merlin.
And when my Mac Break team is out of town, I go wander. But I we were just talking about this, and then the response.
Love the one you're
on
with.
Sites.
Is that your opinion, Mr. Man?
I'm not going to take my relationship advice from Steven Stills. Thanks. But the response from people has just been apoplectic. People are just like out of their mind, and they think that now there's this taint on the entire company, because clearly, you know, you can read in the tea leaves that this means they're going to abandon making computers. And I think one thing you got to be clear about, this actually is in some ways good for developers. It sucks for developers who have hung their next release on Leopard, which they maybe shouldn't have done anyway. But what it does mean is that they get a feature complete beta in June to build on, so that then when it really does come out in October,
maybe that's
got a finished and polished product. Versus, can you imagine if this thing came out and I mean, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at Leopard, but
it's not ready.
It's not ready.
Well, and that's the one positive spin I've heard on this is Steve Jobs took a look at Vista and said, oh, don't worry, guys, there's no hurry. You got all the time. Take your time. Vista sucks. And that might be really the positive spin is Apple wanted to take this time all along, needed this time, and there's no urgency anymore.
And I think the other lesson is, there might be another lesson there, because they saw how Microsoft was able to get away with a 23-year delay in Vista.
Yeah, right. Didn't hurt them. Actually, so and there's a lot of negatives on Vista, by the way. People are really seem to be
really. And you have up till now been very complimentary.
I like it. As Dvorak pointed out, the people who seem to like Vista best are Apple users. Windows users don't seem to be too happy with it.
What are you hearing?
There's all sorts of compatibility issues. If you're upgrading an older machine, nightmare. If you have older hardware and software, potential problems.
Sure.
But that's always to be expected. We might even see that with Leopard. We've certainly seen that before with other versions of OS X. Right. And the really larger issue that's still kind of hanging out there with Vista is it more secure? And a number of security researchers, including one who works for Microsoft, recently said, hey, gang, there's going to be exactly the same problems on this platform. Don't expect it to be secure. So, and frankly, I'm not one of those I used to be. I'm no longer one of those Apple people who say Apple doesn't have to worry. And partly that's because last week, you probably saw it, the zero-day Safari exploit. Guy won $25,000 finding a unpublicized cross-script exploit in Safari. It affects
but it isn't like they got root access by SSHing in. It was you have to navigate to I'm not trying to excuse
well,
it.
Well, but many of the Windows exploits are exactly that. You navigate to a negative site,
true.
And they can install a Trojan horse in your system. Yeah. That's probably the largest class of Windows exploits. So the point is, I think, pretty clear that we've been escaping mostly because we're a minority.
You know, the only thing I've got to say about that, I heard somebody really smart once told me that what you do in life, the things that happen to you in life, don't mean nearly as much as the way that you respond to them. And the way that you respond to things ultimately is the telling thing about a person's character.
Wow, Mr. Miyagi, I'm impressed.
Wax on, wax off. Wax on.
Yeah, I didn't know we were going to get philosophical here.
Spiritual depth of a toaster strudel. here's the thing, though. And I think this is where there is a difference. I mean, yes, of course, everybody's going to be attacked. But I mean, I think the record to date has shown that obviously it's not like Firefox. You're not going to see releases like overnight. But that Apple has tended to be a little bit more responsive to fixing these. No,
I don't know. I don't think there. I was in your court for a long time. But we are with the month of Apple bugs and now this latest Safari thing.
You think they're trying to sweep it under the rug?
No, but I think the case has been pretty clearly proven that there are the similar kinds of almost identical kinds of flaws in OS X. Of course, there's lots of flaws in Unix and Darwin and Apple just shipped 12 fixes, right?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, software update, run your software update.
No, I did. I always do.
Yeah, there was a big...
I'm a Mac user. I don't read that.
Well, they shipped 12 fixes, and my sense of them is that many of them were critical. So these flaws exist. No, I'm not saying Apple is slower or faster to repair them than Microsoft, probably faster. But I think the question is, why do we feel safer on the Apple platform? And I think we might be living in a fool's paradise. And more market share could be a problem. Well, we know where you're living. Sunset District, Fool's Paradise, not much difference, I'll be honest.
But I will say that I think that the natural size, market size of the Apple, of Apple's base I'd be very surprised if it went over 10 or 15% ever.
Well, just a few years ago or maybe a few months ago that it would be 20% sometime soon, 30%. We're not seeing any growth. I don't mind. Do you mind? I don't mind. I think it's great to be a minority.
But I think by being in the minority, I think that's part of the issue is that you're starting to get to a point where we're not interesting. We're not going to be interesting until we get to 30-40%. And so, you know, maybe we are living in a fool's paradise, but we really aren't that interesting. You can't do the kind of things that you want to do. I think there's also a big thing with
hackers can't.
If you want to do a denial, you know, a denial of service or whatever.
No, you need Windows. You bet.
You need Windows.
You need millions of machines.
The other thing is that I think that one of the things that I do notice is that there's a lot of things that on a PC that you can do from an administrator level from somewhere else. You know, there's a lot of access that, you know, with a Mac, it seems like every time you want to put something on, you know, something in the OS, you need to get an approval from the person who's running the computer. It's not always the case, but I think that it's there's
well, that's
that
the interesting
so
thing about
often.
This cross-site scripting flaw,
right?
Is you didn't.
You didn't, but I mean, I think that there are so many gates that are shut that way that I think are open on the Windows
side. I agree, and for a long time I've said that, but I have a feeling. Well, first of all, they're not open anymore on Windows, and Mm-hmm. And I think what we're learning is that many of these flaws can escalate. There are all sorts of escalation. That's what they call this, when you escalate privilege from a limited mm-hmm. user to a full user without permission of the user.
Right.
And I think that, you know, I don't know.
I think this is why Linux is really going to, it's going to take over. Like,
well, and that's the other point. I don't think Linux is any better.
Stuff. It's like, why am I bothering? I could just do all of this in Emacs. I think that's what we're going to see. We're going to see a big move on. A lot of people are going to say, I want the security of 30-year-old software. I'm going to move to you.
Apple's announcement today, Steve Jobs says the Mac is clearly gaining market share with sales growing 36%. Now, reality distortion, guys, sales growing 36% doesn't mean gain in market share because we don't, you know, although he does say it's more than three times the industry growth rate. So, but they did they quote market share numbers?
I don't know if they have. People, I mean, there have been other groups, and I don't have them right in front of me, that have been quoting almost on a quarterly basis that Apple is increasing by, you know, 0.2, 0.3, 0.5%.
Really? Right. Okay.
Yeah, so it's the market share. It has been, they have been
gradually jumping. Going
up. Yeah.
1.5 million Macs shipped in the March quarter. That's 36% growth. 10.5 million iPods, 24% growth. Apple shares... jumping, you'll be glad to know, Scott Bourne, 8% in the after-hours trading. They're now up to $103 in after-hours.
Ah, baby, baby, baby. Oh, remember when I said that $100 number and everybody scoffed?
That $100 mark. Gross profit margins, 35%.
Start that Ray Mora ranch he's been wanting to start.
Hey, I'm going to move to Montana. Going to raise me up some eels. net income, $770 million. That's 87 cents a share.
Oh, wow.
Hoorah. Compared to 47 cents same quarter last year.
Hello, get me Mr. Dividend on the phone, please.
But now, amongst all these numbers, I think something very important is missed. Because remember, Steve's telling the analyst this, and I presume it's a phone call. I don't know how they did it. Usually it's a phone call with the analyst. But one of the things he said, which I thought was very interesting, and Gadget reported this, Apple promises to, quote, surprise and delight users of both the iPhone and Apple TV with new applications and software features as they go along, many of which will be free. They noted they are now using subscription accounting, which avoids that $2, you know, that they had to charge for the 82.11.
Right.
The fact that they're choosing that is in effect saying, hey, we plan to give you new features automatically. So that's very interesting.
I've talked to some developers close to Apple, and that has been a big issue for them, is that they literally can't add a new feature to their pro apps, their base apps, or whatever without charging for it. And it's just been driving them crazy because they don't need
that. That's Sarbanes-Oxley. It's just, it's a nightmare.
That sounds like just a crazy thistle, that whole Sarbanes-Oxley.
Then there are some accounting experts who say, no, Apple's not as being ridiculously scrupulous, et cetera, et cetera. But in any event, the fact that they're shifting to the subscription accounting is good. It means that they can do these upgrades.
Ooh, can I do a segue?
Yes.
Speaking of subscriptions, did you guys see the story about about how Apple? I'm so bad.
You know, it's better if you don't announce that you're going to do it and then do it. You just go right into it. It's okay, Merlin. You can do it.
Well, anyway, I was just reading earlier about subscriptions. That supposedly that now they're saying that Apple. I want to find this link, but it's probably in MBW Ideas. But that Apple is going to be the one putting pressure on the rest of the Big Four to also join EMI. They expect all of these majors to come to Apple with the whole, wait for it, Alex, subscription idea that they expect. That anyway, there should be a lot of interesting things happening on both sides. Labels pushing for subscriptions and Apple pushing for take the DRM.
How would you build subscriptions into iTunes if you're going to?
I think it's really complicated. I think you would almost need to have a second site or to have just really an indication that says this track would be included if you were already a subscriber.
Right.
I mean, like the hard part is, could you get everybody on board? Because in order for it to be really valuable, you kind of have to have almost all of that music included, right?
That was one of the neat things about the Zune was you just, you know, here I have an empty device and I don't have any WMA music, but I'm guessing, dragged albums over. I just said, okay, I'll take that.
Guessing it's exceptions that are hard to deal with.
Right.
So how would you, you know, if everybody's included, it's not hard, but. I'm not sure how.
I think you could have them identified.
You have a button.
You know, standard, you know, just a little button that says, you know, get free if, you know, with subscribe, you know, with subscription or whatever. I mean, you know, there could be a little button that once you know what it is or little ones in red or blue or, you know, listed in a certain way and people will catch on pretty quickly.
Is anybody using a subscription music service?
Any of you? I want to.
It's really.
I just don't want to get some. I don't want to get another player. That's all.
Right. I didn't really get it until I tried, and I only had the Zune for a couple of weeks, but it was just a really nice feeling. To say, it's like going into a music store and on a shopping spree. You go, oh yeah, I'll take. Oh, I like that. And if you get Gil Scott Heron and you like one, but you don't like the other, no big deal. I like that. It's really fun.
Well, and I think the viral nature of it, the playlists really take on a whole new level of teeth. You know, when you can just click on it and download them all to your player.
Sure, I'd say I'd want Alex's stuff. Just give me all Alex's stuff.
That's an interesting thing. Do you guys ever do anything with iMixes on iTunes? Do you ever make them or use them? So you use them?
I use them as recommendations on what to buy.
How do you choose who you're going to follow?
Like, for instance, I looked at Stings and I like his music.
That would be
so
good. Yeah, that's
actually. I picked all of his music.
But you don't use the user generated mixes, just the celebrity.
Actually,
mixes.
I ended up using a few of them because I was listening to some John McLaughlin vintage stuff from the Mahavishnu Orchestra album.
Yeah, baby.
Deep catalog, my friend.
Oh, good stuff.
That is deep catalog.
There was a guy who had built this entire cool list of similar guitar players, Al Di Meola and a bunch of other people. And I ended up spending like $50 going through the whole deal.
But just think what you've done if you'd had a subscription. You could get them all.
Yeah, but I just have a question about the subscription thing. I remember Alex kind of going off against subscriptions, and I want to know what changed his mind.
Well, I wouldn't want to do subscriptions by itself. I think that what I like is the idea that I could get a lower quality subscription, 96-bit or something like that, and just have everything that I want. And then I could have a higher quality subscription, a higher quality, 256-bit DRM free that I could buy. It's just that what I don't want is one or the other. What I want is both.
I think that would really work.
If
I were an artist, I might be against the subscription because it does devalue the music. It makes it be wallpaper. Because no. If you, well, wait a minute. Now think about it. If you love something, you want to buy it, you want to own it. But if it's wallpaper, it's a lot of sampling, right? And I think subscription really lends itself more to that wallpaper.
You're saying
concept.
There's no incentive
to
a buying event.
Yeah, you don't own it. I mean,
I think there is, though, because if it's 96
would still
bit
buy
and
something?
It's free,
well,
I would
says
still,
it's 96
still be
bit.
It. It's I'm not just saying that's my suggestion.
But
that's
not how they do it on Windows. I mean, it's full.
Right? But they also don't have you can't buy it either. I mean, I guess you can. Rhapsody lets you buy them as well.
I don't remember.
I think it does. But the point is that I don't want, I guess as an artist, I think that maybe big artist is one way or the other, but for a smaller artist, the idea that people are sampling your music and theoretically you're getting money for that sample, would make a difference because I don't know how they're going to account for all of this stuff, but typically what you'd want to do is you'd want to account for it by saying, well, there's X number of people paying a subscription. So they're paying 20 and there's, let's say the pot is $10 million and we're committing whatever the number is, 60, 70, 80% of that revenue to the copyright holders, which a lot of times is the record companies, but so the royalties are getting fed back into it based on the number of downloads of that specific song. It means that an individual artist could do very, very well just from viralness. You know, people don't have to go out
and buy it. Well, if I could finish that, my incredibly squirrely idea where this started, when I brought up iMixes, the reason I mentioned that, wouldn't it be intriguing if you applied, and I know Scott's going to hate even the idea of this, but hearing, you know how you like, when you're streaming over the web, there's rules for how often you can play a song and da 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 da, and you can't play by the same artist so many songs and so on. What if they came up with something where it was just to capitalize on the viral nature, where you could create iMixes of any stuff that was available on iTunes? And I haven't really thought this out, so this may not make sense. But what if you could create iMixes of anything that's on iTunes, and then people could go and listen to that and could go like stream that, or could I guess potentially somehow with DRM or whatever get it on their iPod? But you couldn't have, say, more than N songs by an artist or more than N songs from the same album. But you give people this thing where you're basically creating mixtapes for people, which everybody agrees is a good way to get music to people.
You bet.
So, but the idea is you're not cheating on the whole idea of buying a record or buying a whole CD, but you do create this way for people to like share music they think is great. And then it becomes this whole community thing too, where people could come in and it becomes almost like, I don't know, like Dig or whatever, where you come in and you start following somebody whose music you like.
I would be against that, Merlin?
Well, because didn't they really go after you in the mid 90s with all that crazy, all those crazy, was this before the crazy rules about how you could?
Yeah. See,
up?
Here's the thing. I was legal. I worked out a deal with ASCAP before anybody even knew what net radio was. So I was legit.
Well, would something like that make sense and have any value? Cause I'm just thinking, well, what they're trying to avoid is some kind of workaround where you can like get a bunch of music without buying it.
But, well, here's the thing to think about. This changes what kind of licensing agreements they're going to make. And I think that's one of the most interesting aspects of this. There's a huge difference in what you pay for a performance license and what you pay for a distribution or publishing license. So if they move to a subscription service where you don't get to own the music, they might be able to successfully argue that this is a mere performance, as in the terms of the existing performance license at ASCAP, CSAC, and BMI. And boy, howdy, are we talking about a whole different game then. They don't have to pay nearly as much.
Well, that's something the record industry might not like.
I would think they would not like it.
Interesting.
But I can tell you that the people behind the other side of the ball will think it's great.
Yeah, the performers.
Yeah, the people who are having to pay those fees are getting killed by them. In fact, you know, frankly, there is no more net radio business because of all the rules that came about in the late 90s after I was fortunate enough to have sold all my stock in my company.
Well, you know, and of course, you know what's happening with internet radio now. And part of the problem is they want performer royalties.
Yeah, and there's no business there. There's nothing there. Yeah. They completely destroyed it in their greed, in my opinion.
Well, it seems like they wanted to, because this retroactive, is basically saying, and by the way, you owe us for 2006. Pay up or shut up.
Yeah, and it's all about, really, I think what they want to do is protect their old distribution models that they're all safe with and they're all comfortable with and where they've got the big sweetheart deals. I think that's what it's really about.
And see you later, dudes, because it's over.
Yeah. Totally. It's a knucklehead industry.
So all I can say is a good thing I sold my stock.
Yeah. It's too bad because internet radio, what we do is internet radio. And talk radio is not going away. Internet radio will flourish because of this. But
think about this. Arbitron did a study 2 days ago, Leo. 11% of the radio listening public has listened over the internet. Mm-hmm. This is something they couldn't even do 12 years ago.
Right.
That's a huge sea change.
Yeah, it's anyway, I don't want
to. We could do a whole separate show just about. I mean, it just seems like it's the singularity. We keep coming back to like this as a consumer, just trying to get your head around why different aspects of these industries operate the way they do. It's completely baffling to me.
Well, I think we made one mistake. We should have played the rat hole music quite some time.
No, this is not a rat hole. But getting back to the financial news from Apple real quickly. The other financial story, big financial story in the Wall Street Journal today, our friend Steve Steklow contributing to that. By the way, I think Steve got a Pulitzer for his coverage. He and his co-author for his coverage of these stock options scandal. A big kind of a surprise, frankly. Fred Anderson settled with the SEC. He was the former CFO of Apple, forced out at the Apple board because of this options backdating. He settled with the SEC, kind of got off the hook, and then, for reasons unknown, comes back and said, oh, by the way, Steve Jobs told me to do it. He misled him, implicating Jobs, who has been, up to now, been kind of safe. The SEC said, well, Apple's been so forthcoming, we don't have any problem. But is this trouble for Steve Jobs? Is this trouble for Apple?
Well, the board today came out and said, how many times have we heard a crook point a finger at somebody else and said, I didn't do it, Judge, he did.
The interesting thing is he didn't have to. He'd already gotten off.
Well, we don't know, frankly, what the conditions or terms of his deal were. And it might have been that they built this into the whole thing. I don't know. But the board said, we're sticking with Jobs. This guy's lying, or something to that effect.
Jobs has said all along, Jobs gets off the hook. I don't understand the accounting implications of backdating. I didn't at the time, so you can't blame me. Fred Davis says, not only did he understand, I warned him about it.
Yeah. Well, at this point,
Fred
it doesn't Anderson. Look like Fred
Davis
is
Fred Davis is another guy. Fred's an old friend. I'm sorry, Fred. I didn't mean to implicate you. You have nothing to do with this.
Next week, Fred Davis is...
Fred, you may remember, as editor, I think, of a Mac User magazine. He's certainly a longtime Mac guy.
And in the most puzzling episode of Mac Break Quickly Today, Leo completely loses his mind and starts accusing his friends of crimes.
It has absolutely nothing to do with backdating.
Not Chris Perillo. I've never trusted him.
Perillo, I knew he did it. Fred Anderson, the former CFO. Did I say Davis the whole time or just that one time?
I think just once.
Oh, that once.
There's far too much for me to fix this in post. You're getting what you're getting.
I think that once again, if we're really looking at the shareholders' best interest, I don't see any reason why they would go after Steve Jobs. I mean, regardless of
whether
he knew or didn't
know. It's going to be hard to convince anybody to do that because Yeah. I mean, nevertheless, that doesn't mean they won't pursue it.
Well, the last U.S. attorney was an idiot and he got fired. Right. So it doesn't really, you know, I mean, he was going after press. You know, it was a good thing to get, you know, right. that's what you do as a U.S. attorney. You go out and get press so that you can move on to being a judge or a representative or whatever else you're going to do.
Anderson's accusations are pretty nasty. He said that Jobs misled him, telling him that Apple's board had given prior approval, even though it hadn't. Something happened here.
I think one could argue that he feels jilted.
Yeah, I think this sounds more like bitterness.
Jilted lover.
It could be the old, you know, kind of disgruntled ex-employee thing.
Yeah. The timing is odd since it came after a settlement had been announced.
And you know what? It could all be true, but the net effect is that it doesn't seem to matter.
Right. So you think Jobs he'll skate because nobody understands it anyway.
I think they're scared of him because he shoots laser beams from his eyes.
Well, his gross income is something like 3 times the domestic product of 24 other countries. Yeah, so yeah. They probably figure he's got enough to battle him and be okay for a while.
Right. I think it's also that it's just really easy to go after a company as it's imploding because of all the stuff that was done, like in Enron or something like that.
But Apple's up.
They just keep on going up. The stockholders have done nothing but benefit.
Right.
You know, who's been hurt?
And that's the key issue. Alex just brought it up. The Securities and Exchange Commission's number one charge is to protect the average investor. And so everything they do is supposed to be guided by, did the investors get hurt? Obviously, in Enron, people got screwed. So they went to town. But, anybody who owns Apple stock is just getting richer.
I think there's a Latin phrase. Yeah. Who has been hurtus?
Brutus.
Who's been hurtus? Apple's been sued over what appears to be tabbed dialogue boxes.
Oh my gosh.
Over tabbed dialogue boxes. A patent holding company called that, and that's a nice way to put it, called IP Innovation, claims that Apple has engaged in willful and deliberate violations of U.S. patent 5,072,412. Patent describes a computer operating system interface with, quote, workspaces provided by an object-based user interface appear to share windows and other display objects. But
does that mean they're going after Adobe for the tabbed interface?
Well,
everybody uses Photoshop.
Yeah, everybody uses it.
These guys. I mean, the
patent comes from Xerox. They bought it. And the Xerox patent goes back to 1984. And the idea, as best anybody can figure it out, is basically tabs or maybe like in the system preference pane, the buttons that you can choose different control panels.
And I can tell you where Xerox got it. They got it from Epson.
Oh, really?
Epson created this originally with a system called Valdox.
Wow.
And I worked on that system a little bit.
You're
so
kidding.
This actually goes way back to the CPM days. Valdox was a GUI that ran on top of CPM, and they sold that patent to Xerox, who in turn sold it to whoever. But I think it's a process patent, guys, and process patents are not doing so well in front of the court these days.
All right. So Apple.
I really think this is such a manipulation of the copyright, you know,
clearly,
patent law and everything
clearly,
else from what it was originally designed to do, which was actually, you know, just protect guys who were putting something together that were small, that wanted to push this forward. I really think at some point in time, the patent office is going to have to start tightening up and getting rid of these bottom feeders.
Well, the eBay case last year kind of started that trend. The eBay patent that the Supreme Court said, well, yeah, you guys had a patent, but we're going to let eBay use it anyway. I think that sort of set a chilling effect down all these lawyers' spines that they're not going to be able to chase this ambulance.
Yeah, a little common sense ruling. What else is happening in the Apple world? Am I missing something?
It seems like there was a lot of stuff.
Talks to bring lyrics to iTunes?
Yes.
That's kind of good news. Apple's talking to Gracenote. It's interesting. Gracenote, remember, they bought CDDB. Which wasn't lyrics, it's just the tracks and artist and album name. But they
gets
have
so much better all the time.
Yeah, well, I was mad about it because it was kind of a public, it was like buying Wikipedia and turning it
What do you use for, Rat Hole? What do you use for retroactively going, and let's say that you've ripped stuff and you didn't have the information. Like, do you use Brains, or like, what do you use for applying metadata to untagged MP3s?
I use my fingers.
I haven't used anything in years only because I buy everything now online. Everything is tagged.
That's true. I use a program called I Eat Brains.
Brains which, is great. That's a great
It program. Works pretty well. It didn't really recognize some tracks from a Nirvana record yesterday, which I thought was kind of weird.
Yeah.
But it's one thing that's nice about that.
Who can blame it?
Wow. You're from Washington,
He's
huh?
a grunge. He's a.
I hate grunge music.
Oh, way to turn on your community, Scott.
Hey, I live in San Francisco now, dude.
Okay.
We got right. grunge here, too.
You're a class act, Warren. I'm just curious because so what CDDB does, right, if I understand, is they have this huge, ginormous database where people have been submitting tracks and then they have like acoustic footprints that tracks that. Is that how it works?
Yeah, it's kind of primitive. What they do essentially is they look at the number of tracks on the album and the length of the tracks, and then they just figure out heuristically what album it is, which means often that you'll get two or three choices and you have to say, oh, no,
acoustic that's footprint also.
Sting, not Perry Como. I don't know if they use an acoustic footprint.
Well,
when we talk
Sting,
to CDDB...
They look for a de minimis level of suck in the tracks of Sting, and they're able to interpolate which period from his sucking track came from.
All I have to say is that...
That might be too scientific for
that's
you.
A little too, that's a little too fancy for me. Now, when I talked to CDDB, it was actually pretty darn simple. Maybe they're using a thumbprint or fingerprint now, but I don't think they were at the time. Who knows what Grace Note is using? They've added... I think they've acquired these lyrics databases. Apparently, Yahoo Music is going to start doing legal licensed song lyrics. Another reason to like the subscription model. Be nice if Apple added this. And you know, it's in the tag. I mean, you could easily, it's in there.
Yeah.
So it'd be easy to do it. I think that's the one thing I really miss buying online is the liner notes, the album, the art, the lyrics, all of that stuff. Man, I grew up listening. You put the headphones on, you'd have the lyrics in front of you, you'd look at the album while you listen to it. And
this is something where conventions can kind of get in the way because that's totally possible. I mean, there are some podcasts out there. I'm thinking of the Casper Hauser comedy podcast where they have this great thing they do on iTunes where they put out, you know, bits. They put out like skits and stuff like that. But they also, they're the guys who do the SkyMall catalog, fake SkyMall catalog.
Very funny.
Very funny. And but so like sometimes on iTunes, you'll suddenly see a little document icon in your iTunes feed. And it's like, oh, they just put a PDF into the feed. So there's nothing to stop
people. We could do that. Yeah, you're right.
Putting high quality, you could do show notes, you could do high quality art. I might be talking to my butt. I'm pretty sure you can do all this stuff. But I've
totally
definitely
could.
Seen.
Yeah, you can
it's
have,
just another.
It's just
another
an additional file. Yeah.
Just RSS too. That's
It'd
all
be
it
a PDF, which is, you know, it's not paper.
Yeah, but I mean,
you
control the layout. It's not where you're going to do like a tech thing. I mean, you know, it's a good way to like put out something that anybody can look at and it'll be high quality.
Did you hear their This American Life parody? Casper
Hauser.
Oh,
no, I haven't.
Oh, my God. You listen to This American Life, don't you?
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, wait till you hear it.
I'm a hipster from San Francisco. I have to listen.
Oh, wait a minute. I might have to play a little bit of it. Can I play a little bit of it?
Yeah, go.
Brad Ho.
What is their, I wonder what their license is because it is.
Oh, it's, no, don't worry. It's.
You got to listen to this. Go listen. KASPERHAUSER.com. If you've ever listened to This American Life, you'll listen here.
We've all been there, pushed over the edge, to the point where we're so indignant, so totally frustrated that we feel like we're going to shoot somebody in the head. Day on This American Life, going postal, stories of people who lost it. Act one, the postman always rings twice. John Wayland is a...
If you've not listened to This American Life, you won't laugh, but if you have...
It's dead on.
It's dead on.
Yeah.
Do you listen to that show, Scott Bourne?
I've listened to a couple of them. I think it's well done.
It's probably, I would say, the best example of modern radio production ever. I mean, it's just brilliant. But Casper Hauser, I don't know how they did it, but they nailed it. It goes on. It's quite a long it's quite a long podcast. It definitely a must listen to.
Hey, Leo, can I blow your mind?
Yeah, baby.
The Casper Hauser podcast is associated with the same very cool guy who puts out the Coil and Sharp podcast.
Oh.
Who's a guy named Jesse Thorne who does something called The Sound of Young America.
Oh, well, you know.
How's that for three plugs in one paragraph?
You know I'm a fan of in fact, every once in a while, Coil and Sharp come up on my iPod, and it's just a great interlude between the music.
One of the classics was up last week, the drugstore, where they go in, and Coil is going to operate on Sharp, and they want to in a station wagon outside the drugstore. And so they've gone in to get disinfectant materials.
I just heard the one where they want to.
Not once I get in there, I can figure out what's wrong.
I just heard the one where it's they have the very bad German accents. A couple of German guys, they're out watching a football game, and they ask a guy if he can help them train Wolverines
Wolverine football.
To play football.
Wolverines!
Actual Wolverines.
That is an excellent podcast.
Oh, my God. So there's more. So it's not just the CD. There's more coming out on the podcast all the time.
Well, yeah, what they're doing is Jennifer is working with Jesse to do that. This is so off. This is the worst. This is a meta rat hole. But no, he's working with Mal Sharpe's daughter to put that stuff out.
Cool. Very cool. Anyway, where were we? I am so completely lost track of what we were talking about.
Just
is it
following
time for the lyrics yet?
Following the dirigibles of my mind as they drift past.
As they're floating by. Anything else in the Apple world before we get to picks?
I just bought a new iMac, so the new iMacs are coming out tomorrow.
I have a pseudo segue that can get us into picks. It's worth mentioning that a new handbrake just came out.
Oh, it's out. Yes, the media fork has been wrapped back into it. Yep.
This is huge to me because awesome. It's got built-in Apple TV support.
Yep.
It automatically anamorphicizes stuff. It's got chapter markers, and it's got presets.
So is this... I used, as an experiment, I had downloaded the second episode of The Sopranos and used Visual Hub to make it Apple TV. And it did a great job, worked fine.
Awesome.
But would you say Handbrake does a better job?
Different. It's a different tool. This is if you have, let's say you've got a DVD of your child's birthday party.
So it's for ripping.
Yes. If you got a DVD of content that you own and you'd like to get that onto your Apple TV, you just point it. It's completely idiot-proof. You just point it at the drive, and it automatically, it's kind of smart because it looks at the DVD and finds the longest track on there and understands that that's probably the thing that you want.
Right.
And then you just say, it picks all these settings. You can say, I want this for my iPod. I want this for my PlayStation. I want this for whatever.
You'd probably want this in addition to Mac the Ripper, because I think Mac the Ripper can handle some copy-protected disks at Handbrake.
I wouldn't know about that, but the Visual Hub is also, Visual Hub is really like has gotten so much better, and it's if you like
was,
I do it.
It was
for
a
the
fork.
Show.
It was a Handbrake fork, which has now been folded back in.
No. So Visual Hub is the iSquint.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was talking about Media.
Media. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah Media Fork.
Media
Fork.
But
yeah, but
Visual Hub is Visual Hub is for stuff that's already on your hard drive.
Visual Hub is if you've got any kind of, we've talked about this on here before, but if you've got a digital file in some kind of a video format and you needed to transcode it into another kind of video format, it's totally idiot-proof.
Because The Sopranos came in as a DivX file, I think. And I
hypothetically,
just,
if I had a copy,
which of course I didn't. And then
it's got a queue, so you could hypothetically grab a whole season's worth of hypothetical TV shows and drop them on there. And when you and it automatically adds it to iTunes,
and it
so
showed
you wake up
and it's synced
and
up
it's on your
Apple TV. It was amazing. And when I hypothetically watched it, it actually was very good quality.
Yeah, I hypothetically felt really bad for Bobby in that one episode.
Oh,
I felt,
Bobby.
Poor
well,
Bobby.
Yeah, I liked it on your Tumblr. You posted the quote.
The Parker brothers put a lot of thought into this. I think we should respect that. You like that screenshot? That was
it's
hypothetically.
Great. Hypothetically. Where'd you get that screenshot? From your hypothetical Apple?
I used a Canon Digital Rebel.
Did you really?
No.
You shot
already
into your neighbor's house. Oh, we're dead.
Anyway, we're going to fix it all in post. And so that's my segue into picks.
Copyright police.
I have a segue actually into picks.
Jackbooted thugs. Jackbooted thugs.
So I'm going to repeat. I have to repeat a pick this week.
So it was so good that you...
Repeating a pick.
I used it last night, and it saved my patuka so much that I need to mention it again.
It's a double pick.
I'm doing a double pick.
Okay.
The pick is Carbon Copy Cloner.
Very good app.
So
hasn't Super Duper kind of superseded it?
Well, I don't know. I didn't use Super Duper last night. All I know is that I tried to change my hard drive on my laptop, and it's now in pieces. And
what happened to your laptop?
Okay, so what happened was is that I didn't have enough time. I'm leaving for Africa, and I needed a bigger hard drive than the 100 gig one that I have in there. So I figured, I'll just swap it out for a 160. And so, you know, swapping out a hard drive on a 160 on a MacBook is nothing. Swapping out a hard drive on a MacBook Pro is basically disassembling, you know, the entire
computer.
Oh, the
iBook used to be like that too.
And so as I started going into it, it's one of those things like you start doing it, you look at the instructions on fix it. You know, I went through the instructions on fix it, and And it all looks fine. It all looks like it's all going to work out. And then you start going into it, and suddenly you're really taking this thing apart, and you're keeping track of the 80 different but very, very small screws that you've now taken out of your computer. Except that I took 18 or 20 screws out. But I took two. No, I took. I was short two. So when I went to lift up the upper case. Now it says in the instructions that it may be hard to open, so you might have to move it back and forth.
Not that hard.
So what happens when the two screws behind the battery are still attached? When you do that, what you do is you end up separating the spot welds that are holding parts of the component away from the top face, underneath. So the little clicking sound that you hear, just in case anyone ever goes through this, the little clicking sound that you hear is not the plastic sliding out that you think. It's actually
sound of your career ending.
it's the little spot welds popping off. And then as you pull it just a little bit more, and then you realize that it's happened, and you go back, it's already too late, because where those screws are in are now, that metal has now been bent back and forth a couple times, and it's it shears. So what you end up with is this fine looking laptop that you can't actually put back together.
So you can't put it together at all.
I could put it back together, but it would be
floppy.
The problem is there'd be lots of space in there. So what I did is there's this place not too far away from our office called the PowerBook Guy. I don't know if that's the company or the guy, but it's the PowerBook Guy. I sent the PowerBook Guy. I went to the Apple store of all things, and I asked how much is the top cost, and he goes, it's about $300. But if you go to the PowerBook, this is the Apple. They have the Apple store.
Well, that's
you go
cool.
to the PowerBook Guy. I know. I think this was great. He goes, it's really expensive cool. here. But if you go to the PowerBook Guy, he'll do it for probably $150, $200. I haven't done it yet. I instead panicked and because they didn't have any in stock, at the Apple store or the PowerBook Guy, and I have to leave on Friday, so I now have a new PowerBook. so
PowerBook or MacBook?
A new MacBook Pro.
Excellent.
Which is much faster than my last one. And so this one's going to go into the shop. But what was the reason that this came up with Carbon Copy Cloner is because, of course, before I did any of this stuff, I had a perfect clone of my of my computer.
Smart man.
And when I mean, perfect, bootable, everything. And all I had to do was simply, I ran it for, I realized the computer was screwed at 8, bought a new computer at 8:30, and by 11:30 at night, it was like the same computer, but faster.
Cool.
It was nothing. Literally the history of my recent items was still there. It was a perfect copy of my drive and all the operating system stuff and everything else. Now there's a couple of little things where there's a handful of my programs that are coded to
re-enter
the Ethernet
passwords
card.
And stuff like that.
Yeah. There's a handful of stuff like that. I think Skype was freaking out before we started here.
Skype's always freaking out for you, dude.
Alex, can I just bet that you're going to need to reauthorize, Snaps Pro. I'm just going to go ahead and guess.
Oh, yeah. Got to get that new code.
If I get a chest cold, I've got to go reauthorize.
I'm pretty sure that Snaps Pro is going to... I'm gonna test it before I go. Although I have been using... I've been doing a lot more with the I Show You application.
Skitch. Get in the Skitch beta. Skitch
it's done
is
when I'm
change
done.
The way you live. Skitch is so amazing.
Skitch?
Oh, my God. Get in the beta for Skitch. Contact Chris, Atari Boy, and get in for Skitch. Okay. Yeah, okay. He's the guy who makes the Comic Life. I think it's the Comic Life program.
Yeah.
And he's got a screen capture.
Is this Plask?
Yeah, exactly. Plask.com. And he has it's in pretty wide beta right now. I think it's going to go wide in a couple of weeks, and it's mind-blowing. It's such a great screen
Better
capture.
Than Snap Z Pro?
It has, let me give it to you this way. If you take a lot of screen captures and put it on Flickr, you can have multiple accounts. You put in the FTP information for multiple accounts. You go in, you snap something, you click, you right click, it uploads it and then puts the clipboard into your, it puts the URL into your clipboard.
Now, does it video as well?
No, it does not. It does annotated screenshots. So
it's
you can
just
go in
screenshots.
And
screenshots. Okay. Yeah. So we'll still use Snapsy Pro for the screenshots.
Yeah, for
I love I Show You for video. That's what we've been using.
I just finished three GMTs and an Inside the Black Box, and I think, and then one for my own with all slideshows. So what I did is I put them in Photoshop and I just drew over them talking on the Wacom tablet, like the MacBreak Road to 1080p's. And so those will be coming out over the next couple of weeks, but that was all with I Show You. And what's great is you finish it and it's done. Like you do the whole thing and you hit stop.
Oh, there's that long save in Snap Z Pro.
There's not. When you finish I Show You, when you finish
done,
the whole
huh?
thing, it's just done.
That's
and then I move on to the next
one. You want to do, if you can, you want to be using a pretty CPU a pretty heavy CPU machine because it's relying heavily on CPU, but it lets
That is the issue.
It does, but the cool part is even their presets let you go in and say, I'm willing to have a trade-off of CPU versus quality or quality versus CPU, and you pick what works for you, and it works great.
And when I do Photoshop stuff and smaller stuff, the iShowU seems to work really, really well. Where I have trouble is if I'm using Shake or a big 3D application or sometimes some of the Final Cut Pro stuff. That's when things start to really bog down.
Shinywhitebox.com.
Yes.
For iShowU. Anyway.
PowerBook Guy is at powerbookguy.com, and this looks really cool. He's got a bunch of like used, like refurbished. He's got, he can get a 12-inch iBook for $250.
What?
Yeah,
Merlin,
did you buy one? Well, iBook.
Oh, iBook. You want the PowerBook?
Yeah, but still, that's pretty. If it's so, this is a 500 megahertz, 128 megahertz.
I'm really mad. I Text Expander shipped out HTML entity abbreviations, and one of them is .co. And every time I type .com now in my browser, it replaces it with the entity for copyright. It's driving me crazy. Okay, sorry. Continue on with PowerBook Guy. Now I can go to him. I don't know. Somehow I managed to change it. I'm taking that one out. How could they have put that in there? That
was 300 megahertz clamshell blueberry iBook. $169.
That's got your name written all over.
Oh,
hello, ladies.
Give that to Madeline.
Blueberry clamshell. Hey.
You could use that for an episode of That Phone Guy.
I could. It looks like an aqua toilet seat, which the ladies love.
They love
$169. You give that to a kid. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that'd be a good kid computer, wouldn't it? Now, this is pretty good. I could have sold him my cube. Oh, he only does laptops.
And he's just up on
still trying to get rid of that cube, are you, Leo?
Yeah. No, I actually gave it to charity. let them deal with it.
Let the poor kids use it.
they can use that, yeah. So your pick is, Alex Lindsay, is a carbon copy. I do want to, Super Duper is kind of superseded that.
Well, I'll
so take a look.
Here's
at
what's
Duper.
Neat about Super Duper is Super Duper is neat because you can just flip it on and run it and it's great. But if you dig just the tiniest bit under the hood, there's a huge amount of flexibility where you can go in and say, okay, so make sure you skip over caches, skip over this, skip over iTunes, skip over my movies one. So you can actually come up with a pretty nice incremental backup where like maybe once a month you do a full image of your drive. And then like every day you could do a snapshot that takes no time at all to run, that skips all your really huge stuff. And it's just an incremental changes.
And it's free for the basic functionality, which is kind of, I mean, Carbon Copy Loader is absolutely free. I don't think he's done a universal version of it yet, has he?
But the nice thing is they both have
universal.
Oh, it's universal.
I didn't know if it was universal.
They both make bootable drives, which is the key. I mean, right. It's crazy to sit here and split hairs. They're both fantastic. But the thing that's critical about those over any other kind of app is that these make bootable, drives. So
they're images. DMG, they're image copies.
Identical bit for bit images. Yeah.
And it's a lot different than just moving your files over somewhere. Having an image of your drive that you can simply reinstall, it was just amazing. I mean, 3 hours after, it was exactly like nothing had happened. And it was just, that was awesome.
I guess my sense of Super Duper is more up to date. It's universal. Carbon Copy Cloner is not yet. I've used Carbon Copy Cloner for years, and it's free. And frankly, it doesn't really matter that it's not universal, does it? I mean, you're not going to use it every day. Yeah.
Right.
Good pick, I think. But Super Duper is a good one to take a look at. Scott Bourne, your pick?
My pick is a piece of hardware this week. And it's 1/7 of an Alex.
That's $100.
$100.
It's called the M-Audio KeyStation 49. It's a little keyboard. You plug into your USB port. And let me tell you, if you got GarageBand, and you do, if you got a Mac, and probably got a Mac because you're listening to this show, this gives you like a mad, super, super cool synthesizer.
49 keys, so it's almost half a full keyboard, and it's cheap.
It's very cheap, and it has cool features like pitch bend, modulation wheels. It's completely powered off the USB bus. Has a built-in USB MIDI interface, so if you're one of those kind of people that wants to hook up to really sophisticated software, you can do MIDI stuff. I got it, and I hooked it up to GarageBand and just started playing around with the GarageBand samples that come with GarageBand and thought, wow, this is really cool. I happen to have purchased all of the samples that Apple sells, and when I got into the deep stuff, I was thinking, man, this sounds as good as some of the expensive keyboards you can buy at a place like Guitar Center.
$129
and you can buy it, retail about $100. Right.
Wow. So this, so would you say this is the best inexpensive USB keyboard for the Mac?
Oh, I tried several, and this one really is quite good. It comes with some additional software if you're one of those people that knows how to do MIDI stuff and you really want to go nuts.
Ableton and, Live Lite.
You know, for $100, you can hardly have so much fun.
That's great. That's great. My pick, as I promised you at the beginning, Sailing Clicker from sailing.com. I'm surprised you haven't tried this, Merlin. It's a very cool program.
It doesn't work with Sprint phones, I don't think.
It does. You need a Bluetooth phone.
Like an adult Bluetooth relationship.
And then maybe
as
that's why.
To the childlike hobbled Bluetooth.
That may be the problem. Well, Sprint. It doesn't work with my Nokia N93. It won't work with the 95, although I think they have a new version coming out to support the new Symbian.
The Sony Ericssons, it works great with those.
Oh, you've played with it then. You knew what it is.
I've seen people use it. Yeah, it's fantastic. It's a great, great piece of software.
So the idea is you put it on this phone, you put it on your Mac or your PC, and what happens when you come into the room is it's your Mac sees you're there because it's got a Bluetooth relationship. And you can program it to do a variety of things. For instance, when you leave the room, you can have it pause iTunes. When the phone rings, you can have it mute iTunes. I've used it as a Keynote or PowerPoint clicker.
Can't you use it also for caller ID? You can have the caller ID pop up.
It's so great. You get the big, when somebody calls, you get the big letters on the screen saying who's calling. So cool. Lot of nice features and completely programmable. So it gives you a lot of, additional stuff you can do. Pretty much anything you might think of, you could do. And it works very well with a Mac. I've used it for a long time. I'm kind of disappointed because it doesn't work with my current phone, but they promise an update for Symbian. So I'm looking forward to that. That's my suggestion, and that's what I'm sticking with. And it's not free; it's $23.95, but you could try it free at sailing.com, sailing software. And I guess that leaves but one, and that would be you, Mr. Merlin Segway Man.
This has been a really good week for software. I actually have three. I only do one, but I've got.
Oh, come on. Give us all three. Don't hold
that. Well, I don't like to go nuts. Okay, quickly. I just discovered an open source program that's been around for a while, but is new to me, which is called Unison. And Unison is, if you're familiar with something like rsync or chronosync or any of those, where the idea is you've got two folders, a remote and a local one. And those apps are great. Rsync is great.
They're hard to use.
Well, yeah, and they tend to work on the model of which one of these is updated
right. For
most recently. Unison works a little differently. It's a little bit of a pain to set up. It's kind of like it's very bash-like in terms of using profiles and stuff like that. But once you have it set up, you can point it at two places, and you actually enter things like the command line one-liner that you want to use for handling diffs, and it'll actually go in and do diffs on text documents.
Even
things like your preferences. If you're like me and you're walking between two computers all day, you can have a cron job that basically runs this thing in such a way that if you feel like you're always on the same computer. So after one, like any of these things, after one big sync, it then just kind of runs and it'll record any changes and differences all, and you never have to worry about it. It's really, really cool. And it can work on multiple machines using a server.
On Windows even?
It works on everything. It's a command line app that has GUIs in all the different versions. And you just go in and say Unison and then the name of my profile, and it just runs.
Neato.
So if you've ever been one of those people who's like, you know, kind of struggled with how you're going to put all that stuff together, definitely check it out.
Would this work to, say, combine my iTunes libraries so I don't keep buying songs my daughter's already bought?
That's a really good one. I think something like Chronosync would be better for that. I still use and love Chronosync. Chronosync is just a really, really great way to handle stuff like what you're describing, where you can go in and actually say the differences I want you to be concerned with are which one, creation dates, modification dates, file size, and so on.
Okay.
So I have one that automatically every night backs up my iTunes library and overwrites anything where my version is newer or larger.
Okay.
And so it never steps on anything old.
Right.
I wish there was a really easy one-click application for intelligently killing all duplicates, but I don't know.
There's something called iDupe, which a lot of people like.
Oh, really?
Lot. Yeah. That I would take a look at, and I believe it's free, and it's designed for iTunes specifically.
I will totally check that out. I do. So if you want to find, this is a stupid long URL, so if you search for Unison File Synchronizer on the Google, you'll find this. It's very cool. It's a little bit geeky, but this is a problem that's kind of geeky, so I love that. Very quickly, number two, one of my all-time favorite companies, Panic, came out this week with something called Coda, which is a very ambitious web development application, what I would call a kind of a prosumer web development application. It's not a full-on IDE. You're not going to build anything in Rails inside of it. But if you need to do stuff with HTML, this is a one-window application. You get this at panic.com/coda. Very modestly priced for what you get, and it's just simply beautiful. Like all of these Panic things, it's like just like a big bowl of rainbow sherbet. It looks gorgeous. It's very very easy to use, has a lot of power, built-in SSH shell. Very cool app. If you're somebody who does, you know, HTML, but maybe not a lot of actual like building anything besides basic PHP, this is really something to look at.
So it's not Dreamweaver.
No, it's not. But it's not trying to psych you out and be a WYSIWYG, but you can do stuff. For example, like say, okay, I want to look at my code in this window, and then in the same window, I also want to see a preview, and I want to see a shell next to that. So if you've got a big ass screen, this is this app. You can do everything all in this one ginormous kind of multi-pane window.
Now, these guys do Transmit. Does it integrate with Transmit, kind of?
Well, when you open it up the very first time, the first thing that asks you is, do you want to import all of your transport or all of your Transmit
favorites? I'm buying this. How much is it?
It's $100 retail. It's $70. I bought it. I bought it the first hour it was out because I'm a total fanboy of Panic. But it's really neat, though. If you're a Mac person who is doing, you know, some web stuff, but you're just sick of dealing with, like, you know, TextMate. I would never give up TextMate. To me, that's the power user app, or BBEdit. But if you want a really nice, like, easy to use HTML application, it's great. Finally, last one. I can't believe you're indulging me in this.
No,
you
think this is
the Merlin show?
You make me so happy when I get to talk about it.
Everybody loves these. No.
We all miss on OS 8 and 9. We all miss the Apple Location Manager. Which used to make it.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes.
I am at work, so yes. Use this IP address and these sound settings, and so on and so on and so on. This is not perfect, but it's pretty good. It's called Marco Polo, and it's an open source location manager.
What's it called?
It's called Marco
Polo.
Polo.
What's
Marco.
It called? Polo.
Marco. I need my glasses. And what it does is it's an intelligent little location manager that looks at indications that you give it. And then it changes your settings based on how confident it is that you're someplace different. So you say, if I can be given this IP address, I have a high level of confidence that I'm at home. And if I can see this AP
for wireless,
I have a low level of confidence that I may be here, and so on. And so basically it has two kind of layers to it. The first layer is it uses things that it can gather about your environment to say where it thinks you are. And then second, it can apply rules based upon that. It's kind of geeky, but if you're somebody who's always traveling around and you go to the same five places over and over and get sick of changing your default printer, this is something you might want to look at.
Very
Marco Polo.
Cool. Marco.
I got that via, I believe, Ultimate Apple Weblog, and it's a great little app.
Well,
I am so sorry. I gave you three different pieces of software.
That's good. This has been a software-rich show, and that's fine. I think that's a good thing.
Ambrick.
No more media fork. Ambrick. not that you'd ever use that for illegal nefarious purposes.
I wouldn't even know how to.
No, me neither.
I've disabled. I've got two optical drives on the.
Oh, look at this! Oh, Coda does a little thumbnail of your site.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's pretty.
No, tell me that isn't the prettiest.
With little pieces of tape on it.
Beautiful, diaphanous. You can go in and you can change. You can actually change that thumbnail too, as to a different photo.
Oh, I do like this. Oh, so this would be good for editing CSS files.
Well, do you have it open right now?
Yeah.
I don't have it open in front of me, but go to like split preview or split pane or split window or something like that. And it's cool because you can, as you're developing, you'll see the changes updated automatically in the window next to it.
Neato.
And it has tabs.
So one of the things I still do a lot of by hand is modifying CSS for various sites.
Well, yeah, and here's the thing. If you're like me and you're always going cowboy, where you like go straight onto the server and you open it and transmit,
this is
how you'll do that.
TextMate, yep.
So you can now, if you want to be really cool, you can download all your stuff and kind of sync it. But then when you need to go in and be a cowboy, you can go on the server and edit it live right inside this GUI.
Yeah, this looks like the way to do it. Very cool. Well, I would expect something this good from Panic because they really know what they're doing.
They're gifted.
Guys, we're out of time. Not really, but I'm going to pretend we're out of time. We're out of tape, actually. We've just ran out of all the tape. Scott, can you send me a pancake quick?
Yeah, I got my tape splicer, too.
You know, I was just at SFO, and they have a... I think it's mostly set up by Dolby, because everything's on loan from Dolby, in the United Concourse, gates 76 through 79. an audio history exhibit. Scott, if you haven't seen it, you've got to go see it.
Yeah, I read about it in the paper. Really cool. It made me want to fly somewhere just so I could go look at
it. It's worth it. Yeah, because you have to get, it's inside security, so you actually have to fly somewhere to see it. But among other things, they have an old Ampex recorder with actually it's one of the original ones with the pancake on it.
Oh my gosh.
And it reminded me, we used to buy tape without the, wouldn't have the covers on it. You'd buy it in a pancake and you'd reel it off on a reel. And then, they had a wire recorder of all things.
Before our time.
Yeah.
Leo.
Well, no, we used to do Mac Break Weekly on a wire recorder.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Many years ago. You probably don't remember that, but,
of course, there weren't any Macs.
Oh, sound would, like this.
That was back before the war. Then you couldn't get good wire. You had to make your own wire out of string.
Hey, man. And that cheap wire made out of wood.
I had children to extrude it for us.
All right. Hey, yeah, we're out of time. It is great to talk to all of you. We're glad to be back, and we hope you come back next week for another lovely edition of Mac Break Weekly. Have a great Mac week. What?
I have one thing to say.
What? Yes.
I have one thing to say. Yes. We talked about it a little bit on Twit, but I want to make sure that
the code, the coupon code,
the code, PXC50. We're letting people join the Pixel Core for $50 for the whole summer. It's normally like $200, and there is a ton of challenges and training, and like over 80 hours of training, over $40,000 to $50,000 of software that you get access to. There is, it's really going to be a great summer. So if you're looking for what you're going to do over the summer and you want to learn some graphics, even if you just want to play with big toys, even if you're not doing this as a profession, this is the time to figure it out. So, and to play with it. And so you can go to pixscore.com and check it out. We're pretty excited to have everybody. And it's already starting to shape up to be a really, really fun time. So anyway, check that out.
It's a good deal. And, $50 for a whole summer. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it'll keep you busy. You should put your kids into it.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So
that's a great idea. Maybe I will.
There you go.
All right. Now it's time to say goodbye. See y'all later. Bye bye.
Adios.
Marco.
Hola.
All right. That's a
good
way
to end that. So I asked people on my Twitter list to give me a list of words to use in this show to try and work in.
And did you?
Yes. From Gord.
Wait a minute. You bastard. You had a hidden agenda.
So for Gord, I got taint. For Joel Johnson from Dethroner, I got servile. Vociferous for Never Morgan. For Jason Schoen, I worked in Dirigible, Remora.
I was wondering where Dirigible and Remora came from.
I regret that I could not get Kumquat for Ev, or Homophonous for Dan Morin of Mac User.
Oh, you weren't trying if you didn't get Homophonous in.
I was trying.
Scott, I could have done Kumquat.
Scott Simpson, I got Diaphanous and Sherbet. Jason Schoen, Dirigible. Jeff Veen, Knucklehead.
How fun.
Pretty good.
What a good game that is.
But I didn't get Kumquat in for Ev, so I may have to carry that over to next week.
Now I feel bad I'm not on Twitter anymore.